We are live from the scene as the nation absorbs the horror of a gun attack in broad daylight on Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords.
Gabrielle Giffords was going out practicing that First Amendment right that she had when some bastard shot her down.
Six are killed by an Arizona gunman, and Congresswoman Giffords is fighting for her life. 12 more are shot and wounded, and the questions have started. How did this happen, and why did this happen?
I hope that all Americans are saddened and as shocked as we are.
We have the latest details on the search for the alleged accomplice, the eyewitness accounts, and all the analysis of a shocking crime.
A special edition of This Week with Christiane Amanpour. Tragedy in Tucson starts right now.
This morning, we come to you live from the University Medical Center in Tucson, Arizona. Yesterday, in this desert town, a gunman opened fire during a meet-and-greet political event at a local supermarket not far from here. Six people are dead, among them a federal judge and a 9-year-old girl. The primary target was Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. She was shot in the head and is still in critical condition after surgery in the building behind me. The gunman is in custody. Police are searching for a possible accomplice, and now the questions mount. What triggered this tragedy in Tucson? It started just after 10 a.m. Saturday, Tucson time. Congresswoman Giffords had been holding a town meeting with constituents in this parking lot of a local Safeway. Alex Villick, a young volunteer, was standing about 3 feet away from her.
Kind of shady looking gentleman came up, asked me if he could talk to the congresswoman. So just like anybody else, I redirected him to the back of the line. Came back about 30 seconds later, and before I knew, he was barging through the tables toward the congresswoman.
Stephen Rail was there too. A local doctor, he had come to meet Giffords and saw a man with a blank expression on his face.
I looked up and saw a man with a gun shoot her in the head and then continue firing, rapid fire, with just point blank at everybody who was in the area. And there was really nowhere to run. I laid on the ground as if I had been shot in order to not be a target.
Rail says that when the shooting stopped, many who weren't hurt leapt into action.
The shooter was actually tackled by one of her aides, and several people were holding him down.
Rail, a former ER doctor, started treating the wounded.
It was very apparent that at least three of the people were mortally wounded right away. One guy was on his face and not unresponsive.
He saw a young girl. It turns out she was 9-year-old Christina Taylor, who had come to the event with a neighbor.
She was unresponsive, and as a medical person, it did not look good.
Also shot and bleeding, federal judge John Roll and several of Gifford's aides. Dr. Rail went over to check on the congresswoman.
She appeared to be conscious. She was had a head wound that was covered with blood. One of her aides had her propped up was holding his arm around her, had her propped up kind of against the wall of the Safeway, and was comforting her, and had most of her face covered with the jacket.
In the end, five people were pronounced dead at the scene as Giffords and the others were airlifted to the hospital. As news of the shooting spread, so did speculation about what might have provoked the killer.
It feels very, very eerie, very uncomfortable, very unsettling, and right now we really don't know the full extent of this story.
Last year, with the immigration and healthcare battles at a fever pitch in this state, Giffords' office had been vandalized. And today, as the congresswoman's father rushed to her bedside, a reporter asked him if his daughter had any enemies. Yes, he said, the whole Tea Party. But in fact, the suspect in custody, 22-year-old Jared Loughner, has no known ties to the Tea Party or any conservative group. At the White House, President Obama huddled with his advisers in the Situation Room. As FBI Director Robert Mueller headed to the scene of the crime, the president went to the podium to address the nation.
It's not surprising that today Gabby was doing what she always does, listening to the hopes and concerns of her neighbors. That is the essence of what our democracy is all about. That is why this is more than a tragedy for those involved. It is a tragedy for Arizona and a tragedy for our entire country. What Americans do at times of tragedy is to come together and support each other.
At 2 p.m. Tucson time, 4 hours after the shooting, the Congresswoman's surgeon emerged with an update.
The Congresswoman is not deceased.
Can you tell us her condition currently?
She is in critical condition.
The bullet had passed straight through her brain, but after hours of grueling surgery, Giffords was still alive.
I'm about as optimistic as it can get in this situation.
6 of the other 19 victims, there was no hope. Among them, 9-year-old Christina Taylor, pronounced dead at the hospital. 30-year-old Gabe Zimmerman, Giffords' director of community outreach. He was engaged to be married. And Judge Roll, the Tucson sheriff, Clarence Dupnik, was a friend of his.
This morning, got up like he does on every Saturday morning, went to Mass, because he knows Gabrielle very well, decided to come around the corner and say hi. Unfortunately, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
The sheriff also says that he's not convinced the shooter acted alone.
We have an individual that we are actively in pursuit of, but I can't tell you who he is at this point.
And a few hours later, authorities released a photo of the person they said they were seeking, a white male, 40 to 50 years old. An individual, police believe, came to Congresswoman Giffords' town meeting with the shooter, Jared Loeffner. In Arizona, the flags are flying at half-mast in front of the medical center where the Congresswoman is being treated. Governor Jan Brewer's voice cracked with emotion as she addressed reporters.
I am just heartbroken. Gabby is more than just a colleague. She is actually a friend. She has always been a noble public servant, and my thoughts and my prayers are with Congresswoman Giffords and her family, the Congresswoman's staff and their families, as well as other victims of this senseless and cruel violence. It's an unbelievable tragedy that the people of Arizona experience today.
Last night, this was the scene outside the hospital in Tucson, as supporters and friends of the Congresswoman and the other victims gathered and stood vigil, waiting for news. And the sheriff has just come out within the last 15 minutes or so, saying that in fact, in total, there were 20 victims, dead and wounded. 20, not 19. So that's the latest figure that we have. I'm joined now by George Stephanopoulos, anchor of Good Morning America, and obviously longtime friend of This Week. There's no motive yet. The perpetrator is silent so far. No connections yet to what happened. What does this mean for the, really for the story of this nation?
Well, as you say, there's so much we don't know yet about the killer, about, you know, we know he was unhinged in some way. We don't know whether he was politically motivated in an active way, but we do know this. This is a moment for the country. You saw the sheriff there talk about time for a little soul searching, and that has already begun, I think, in this country. Questions about, has the political debate gotten too hot? Has all this anger boiling over in the country in some way reached out and touched people in a way that might in some way motivate violence? It's going to lead to big questions, Christian, for Congress. How will their security change in the wake of all this?
Do you think that debate can actually be had? Because already you're seeing that debate itself being polarized.
Well, and that's the world we live in right now. And again, to stress, we don't know if this is more like Columbine and Virginia Tech, just a crazy person unhinged, or Oklahoma City, where the bomber was much more politically motivated. He was very conscious of his political motivations. But this is something that people were already worried about. This is not the first time that we've seen attacks against government officials, even though it's the first attack against a member of Congress in 30 years. Already this week, those two package bombs to the government offices in Maryland and Washington, D.C.
And we're going to be delving into this all throughout this hour, and you're going to stay with us, George, so thank you so much. And right now, we're joined by a close friend of the Congresswoman's family, Tillman Fertitta from Houston. Mr. Fertitta, thank you so much for joining us. You have just spoken to the family overnight. Can you tell us the latest on Congresswoman Giffords' condition, please?
I mean, she's in critical condition, and it's going to be very tough for the next few days and then even after that. And I think that the family is prepared for it, and they know that Gabby's one of the toughest fighters there is out there, and everybody's praying for her.
as people do pray for her, and she's obviously galvanized the thoughts of this whole nation and internationally as well, what are the doctors telling you, what is her husband telling you about her actual level of consciousness? You know, there were so many reports that she was conscious before and after this all happened.
She was conscious, you know, before the surgery, and Mark called me right before he got on the plane and took off, and then she went into surgery. But she is in induced coma right now, and she'll be in the induced coma for the next few days. That's what the doctors feel like is best. They've got to make sure she's not, I'm not a doctor, but they've got to make sure that, you know, they control the, you know, that the brain continues to operate well, and so this is what's best, and they're keeping the family close by and just telling them, you know, we're going to keep her like this and see what happens.
And how is her husband holding up? He's obviously the next commander for the shuttle mission. He was training in Houston. You provided the plane, I believe.
Yeah, Mark and Gabby are very good friends, and when Mark called me yesterday morning and said, hey, I got to get to Tucson, of course, we worked it out very quickly. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle for his brother in space. He's on the space station right now, and we've had conversations with him because he's trying to get information, and the whole family's struggling. Mark's very upset and, you know, very bitter right now that something like this would happen. You got to understand, Gabby is one of those people that doesn't offend anybody. She likes everybody, Republicans, Democrats. She's so accessible. Here it is. Remember, the election's over, and she's not with her husband. She's meeting all her constituents in Tucson yesterday, hundreds of them. And she's not running for re-election right now. And that's what I guess has affected all of us, is of all the people out there, not that anybody deserves this, mm-hmm. but for this to happen to Gabby and for this to happen to all those poor people that happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's so unfortunate for everybody.
Mr. Fertitta, thank you so much for joining us on This Morning. 20 people shot, several at point blank range. Many of the survivors are being treated behind me here at the University Medical Center. And now authorities want to know what caused the alleged gunman, Jared Lee Loeffner, to snap. ABC News senior justice correspondent Pierre Thomas has the latest on the investigation into this troubled young man.
The suspect is identified as 22-year-old Jared Lee Loeffner. Young, angry, increasingly unstable, the last person you want to see with a gun. Eyewitnesses say Loeffner was coldly detached as he shot the congresswoman and victim after victim.
He was very young, dressed in dark navy sweats, and he just began shooting, and there was a sense of unreality to it.
And sources say his postings on the internet suggest his murderous rampage was premeditated. Only hours before the shootings, he allegedly posted a MySpace message entitled, "Goodbye, Friends." It begins, "Dear friends, please don't be mad at me." But why would a young man from suburbia slaughter so many? Loeffner appears to have been obsessed with violence and was apparently angry at the government. He listed this YouTube posting as one of his favorites. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. He appears paranoid, suggesting the government was monitoring his communications. "I know who's listening," he wrote. He also discusses mind control and brainwashed methods.
I have no reason to believe that the person was insane. Was he unstable? I would agree with that.
His neighbors, Vic and Amelia Cruz, were horrified.
I thought it was just a total disgrace. Well, I mean,
especially to
for the 9-year-old child, that was...
A 22-year-old kid just threw his life away and took how many with him?
They wondered, had signals been missed?
There should have been red flags, you know?
The things he put on the internet, and nobody noticed that there might be a concern.
Former high school classmates say Loeffner never fit in.
He was just off to himself and more of an outcast.
A lonely kid, just off to himself.
One friend he did manage to make, Caitlin Parker, said he became more peculiar in recent years. She recalled a strange encounter he once had with the wounded congresswoman.
As I knew him more and more after high school, he got a little bit more odd. I mean, he was obsessed with the 2012 prophecy. I mean, he met Gabrielle Giffords once in 07 and told me, he asked her some question that made absolutely no sense to me. But he said, I can't believe she doesn't understand it. Politicians just don't get it.
Life for Loeffner was punctuated by failure. After high school, he tried to enlist in the Army, but was rejected. Police say he toyed with drugs in 2007. In college, he made classmates uncomfortable.
One woman had a poem that was, had something to do with an abortion, and he made a comment to the effect of she was like a terrorist killing the baby, and then laughed about that.
Last fall, he was suspended from college after school officials found a rambling, incoherent YouTube video posted by Loeffner. They told him if he wanted to return, he would need to obtain a mental health evaluation. By then, Loeffner was known to police.
There have been law enforcement contacts with the individual where he made threats. When you look at unbalanced people, how they are, how they respond to the vitriol that comes out of certain mouths about tearing down the government, the anger, the hatred, the bigotry that goes on in this country is getting to be outrageous. And unfortunately, Arizona, I think, has become sort of the capital. We have become the mecca for prejudice and bigotry.
The FBI has begun to dissect Loeffner's background, and a massive manhunt has been launched to look for the potential accomplice in this surveillance photo. The investigative task force includes not only the FBI, but local and state police and a cadre of federal agencies. Police plan to trace the firearm used in the shooting. Sources describe the weapon as a semi-automatic pistol with an extended clip.
He probably would have shot other people had he not been tackled by two people.
Saturday shootings reflect a disturbing trend. Mass shootings have become commonplace since the Virginia Tech massacre in 2007. There have been dozens of incidents where three or more people have been fatally wounded. Hundreds have died. The image is always the same. Innocent lives lost, police tape, sirens. And Loeffner, like so many suspects before him, young, angry, troubled, and with a gun. For This Week, I'm Pierre Thomas in Washington.
There have also been so many stories of courage and fortitude around this tragedy. The person who tackled Loeffner to the ground, and also a young intern, 20-year-old Daniel Hernandez, who held Congresswoman Giffords as he saw her go down, running towards the gunfire. He joins us right now on the phone. Daniel Hernandez, thank you for joining us. It must have been an incredible moment as you ran towards the gunfire when it all broke out. Tell me what happened yesterday.
Of course, because there is a pending investigation, we're trying to make sure that everything that we talk about is just details regarding the incident after the shooting. Yesterday, I was helping Congresswoman Giffords, Congress on your corner, which was an event to try and meet with her constituents. And before the shooting happened, we had a lot of excited constituents who were very happy to get the opportunity to speak to their congresswoman because everybody was going to get a chance to speak with her one-on-one for about 3 to 5 minutes. However, as you know, there was a tragic shooting where we ended up having 19 victims and 6 fatalities. But when the shooting started, my first instinct was to try and make sure that the congresswoman and her staff were okay. I have limited experience in triage and training. So when I heard gunshots, my first instinct was to head towards the congresswoman to make sure that she was okay. Once I saw that she was down and there were more than one victim, I went ahead and started doing the limited triage that I could with what I had. So checking for pulses and then also making sure that covering and applying pressure.
It must have been a terrifying experience for you, and then to have the presence of mind to know what to do, and you saw her head was severely wounded. Is that correct?
Yes. When this happened, I kind of just shut off all emotion because I knew I wouldn't be any good to anyone if I had a breakdown or if I ran away or if I did anything other than try and help those who needed help. So that was the congresswoman and her staff and several constituents.
And once you were able to hold her, you got bandages. They were really sort of pieces of cloth, I think, that were given to you. What then happened? How long did it take before the ambulance or the airlift came?
I had to lift up the congresswoman because she was severely injured, and I wanted to make sure that she was able to breathe okay because there was so much blood. We had to grab whatever we could, and because we were outside of a grocery store, the employees from the grocery store brought out smocks that are used by the meat department that were clean, so that we may use them as bandages, because that was really the only clean cloth that we had. I don't know how much time it took. It seemed like it took an eternity, but that's just because of the way that the events were unfolding. Because I was trying to make sure that I was holding the congresswoman so that she could still breathe well, but also make sure that I was holding her wound so that she didn't, so that she was in good enough condition to be able to be transported by ambulance to the hospital.
Daniel, was she conscious was she able to communicate with you? Were you able to communicate with her?
The congresswoman was alert and conscious. She was able to hold my hand when I would ask her if she could hear me. I wasn't able to get any words from her. She may have been trying, but because of the way that I was having to hold her, it was a lot easier just to, if you can hear me, Gabby, just grab my hand to let me know that you're okay. So it was just communication that she was doing by grabbing my hand and acknowledging that she could hear me.
In 2009, a protester dropped a handgun at one of Congresswoman Giffords' town hall events. She explicitly warned of the dangers of heated political rhetoric, and yet she insisted on meeting with constituents face to face. And now she may have fallen victim to the violence she warned of. ABC News correspondent David Wright reports on the uncertainty the congresswoman lived with every single day.
Good morning, Christian. You know, this is no longer the Wild West, but here in Arizona, there's no shortage of guns and no shortage of anger. That said, what happened yesterday morning here at the parking lot of Safeway caught everyone by complete surprise.
Hey, how are you?
Congresswoman Gabby Giffords liked to joke that her district includes Tombstone and the OK Corral. But until yesterday morning, most people here would have said that rogue gunslingers were part of the distant past. On election night in November, 18 of the politicians in the crosshairs of Sarah Palin's political action committee lost, but not Gabby Giffords.
Tonight's victory is no accident. Even when we saw so many other fine candidates across the country lose on Tuesday night.
It was very much a squeaker. I mean, it was 4,000 votes, and everybody was on pins and needles, and they were counting votes for days after the election. It was very, very close. And she was running against a very Tea Party candidate who would talk about how if 10% was good enough for Jesus Christ, it's good enough for the federal government in his tax crusade, for example.
Giffords has, in some ways, a model resume for politics. She's the wife of an astronaut. Her husband, Mark, was due to command the last flight of the space shuttle Endeavour in April. Giffords is also a successful businesswoman. After an Ivy League education and a Fulbright scholarship, she ran her grandfather's tire business and boosted profits.
She took that over, learned how to change tires and learned the business of it. And then on top of it all, she was at that time engaged to an astronaut. And I was like, wait a minute. So you're smart, successful, you ride motorcycles, and you're going to marry an astronaut. That's just, I don't know anybody like that.
Politically, she has prided herself on being a centrist, independent-minded. She has not always towed the party line. Here she is on Fox News talking about the deficit last spring.
This debt and deficit that we are accumulating will be our greatest national security threat, frankly, if we don't address it. And
wow,
I think Americans are starting to pay attention.
Hang on. You think it's our greatest national security threat if we don't address
it? I do. I absolutely do.
When you make statements, you know, like this is the greatest threat to our nation, I mean, you sound like a Republican now. You sound like a conservative. Have you changed?
You know, actually, as a former Republican, I consider myself someone who is pretty in the middle. I'm a blue dog Democrat.
Last week, she was one of 19 Democrats who did not vote for Nancy Pelosi to remain Speaker of the House. Instead, she cast her vote for the civil rights hero, Congressman John Lewis. Clearly, she didn't expect this, nor did her close friends and supporters. Linda Lopez is an Arizona state senator and was one of Gifford's bridesmaids.
I have to tell you that one of the most horrific things was when it came across the news on the TV at the ER waiting room that she had died. We didn't find out until several minutes later, probably 15, 20 minutes later, that she was in fact alive. So it's been a real roller coaster of emotions for us. I'm very hopeful for her, but I have to tell you, when I look at the TV and I see her picture, I get very emotional about it. It's a real hard thing to deal with.
But violence, or at least violent rhetoric, to some extent comes with the territory. Arizona has been a tinderbox of anger, especially on immigration.
Go home, illegals!
And health care. And Giffords has been in the thick of it, even when the crowds were decidedly hostile.
Well, darling of Obama, who follows everything he does.
Giffords told a local interviewer there's no substitute for direct interaction with constituents.
Are you still going to be out there publicly talking about health care?
We're not planning on changing our schedule. My belief is you got to do your job. I mean, your job is to be a representative, and that's not just a job title to job description. So if you're going to represent people, you got to get out and make sure you understand what they're thinking.
It is a Republican district, so it's surprising a Democrat was able to survive at all. But one thing that Gabby Giffords was very good at was a one-on-one kind of relationship with her constituents, which is what she was doing today, meeting with them one-on-one.
But that sort of outreach clearly carries some risk. In 2009, after one of her town hall meetings on health care reform, they found a gun someone had left behind. Last March, after Congress passed health care reform, someone shot out the glass door of her Tucson office. In the midterms, when Palin's PAC put her district literally in the crosshairs, Giffords strongly objected to that imagery.
I mean, this is a situation where they really need to realize that the rhetoric and firing people up and, you know, even things, for example, we're on Sarah Palin's targeted list, but the thing is that the way that she has it depicted has the crosshairs of a gun sight over our district. And when people do that, they've got to realize there's consequences to that action.
Last night at the candlelight vigil outside the hospital, the bitterness of that campaign was very much on her supporters' minds.
When you talk that type of ratcheted up rhetoric, when you have targets on people, literally targets on people that you want to take down politically, that causes the unhinged to go over that edge. And we cannot afford that anymore.
This is a horrendous act of violence, but does it surprise you in the context of the bitterness of Arizona politics at the moment?
You know, you always think with the rhetoric at the level that it's at, that something terrible is going to happen, but you never really think it's going to happen, and in this case, it did.
Yesterday, Tucson's sheriff went even further in an emotional news conference.
I think it's time, as a country, that we need to do a little soul searching, because I think it's the vitriolic rhetoric that we hear day in and day out from people in the radio business and some people in the TV business, and what we see on TV and how our youngsters are being raised, that this has not become the nice United States of America that most of us grew up in. The anger, the hatred, the bigotry that goes on in this country is getting to be outrageous. And unfortunately, Arizona, I think, has become sort of the capital.
Joining me right now is George Stephanopoulos again of Good Morning America and also one of Arizona's congressional members, Republican Jeff Flake. Thank you very much for being with us here. You heard what was being said there. There's a lot of real sort of heart-wrenching debate right now over is the climate in this country sort of responsible for this?
Every time there's a shooting like this or there's something like this happens, that debate comes up. Sometimes statements are made that are dialed back later because it turns out that the motive wasn't what people assumed. And so I think we have to be careful there. But all of us want a more civil environment. And let me just say, in Arizona here with the delegation, some people think, oh, it's Republicans here, Democrats here, but on issues like immigration and whatnot, there is a lot of cooperation, and particularly with Gabby Giffords. She has a district that you have to have that cooperation with, and so we have delegation meetings frequently, and it's a it's an environment where we work together.
That is definitely true. And of course, Gabby Giffords, you say, is moderate. She actually voted against Nancy Pelosi last week for Speaker, worked across party lines. But respond to what the sheriff was saying, particularly about Arizona. You all may work together as elected officials, but there has been real intense anger in this state, especially because of the issue of immigration.
There has, and that's it's troubling, and I think all of us hear that and feel it. And the statement that Gabby made, hey, we're going to go on as before after threats were made, I think all of us have had statements made and whatnot that you think, you know, what do you do but go on? And you can't just shut yourself in your office. You've got to go out.
Beyond meeting with your constituents, right, what do you do as an elected official to try to do what you said you want, to have a more civil debate, to really try to make the climate more conducive to working together in a more civil way?
Well, when we can work together between the parties on these issues, I think that's what people want to see, and to make sure that we are, and to the extent that we need to do that more, to let people know that this is an issue that affects everybody and everybody's working it on it together. I think perhaps we need to do more of that.
How about the issue of security? Congressman Giffords had gotten threats.
Right.
The federal judge, Judge Rule, had gotten threats before. What kind of precautions do you think you and other members of Congress are going to have to take right now?
I think certainly when threats are made, we'll take them more seriously. I can tell you every member of Congress receives some. Your office staff will call you and say, we had this caller, we don't know what to do with him. If a direct threat is made on your life, obviously those are turned over, and I think all of us have turned some of those over to the authorities. But the danger is some of these people you dismiss as crackpots, you know, a crackpot with a gun is dangerous, and that is worrisome. And I think what really hit home to all of us on Capitol Hill yesterday was that you're not only putting yourself in danger, if you ignore these kind of threats, you're putting staff in danger as well. And that's something I can tell you I haven't fully appreciated, and I'm sure some of my colleagues feel the same.
Congressman Flake, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
We're turning to two more of your colleagues and also Congresswoman Griffith's colleagues and friends, Congressman Chris Van Hollen and Congressman Joe Crowley, both in Washington. Congressman Crowley, if I could ask you first, you're a close friend. You had dinner with Congresswoman Giffords just this weekend, just before the tragedy. What was the conversation between you? How was she then?
It was actually lunch on Thursday at the New Democrat Coalition, which she's a member of and which I chair. And Gabby had approached me about becoming the chair of the task force on energy within the New Dems, and because of her expertise on solar energy, obviously coming from Arizona, and my kind of like nonchalant, well, of course, you know, you're not a freshman, you know, we know what your skills are. And she's just a very active member overall, and a very dear friend, I think, to many members of Congress. I had the great honor of being one of the first people to endorse her in a primary about 5 years ago, and we've been close friends ever since.
And Congressman Van Hollen, I know you were also friends of Gabby Giffords. She's always in a tough race. You were leading the congressional campaign for the Democrats. Talk a little bit about that. We spoke so much during last year about the anger that was out there in the country. The rhetoric definitely got ratcheted up all throughout the course of the campaign. Going forward, what do you think you, other members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans and likes, can do to help bring the temperature down?
Well, George, as Jeff Flake said, I think this is a moment for all of us in Congress, all of us in the country, all of us in the media, to reflect on where we are today in the debate. I think we would all agree that there's a place for a vigorous, spirited debate in this country, but we need to do it in a way that's respectful of other people's views. And in that regard, Gabby Giffords was a role model. She was a person who was passionate about issues, but very even-tempered in her approach to things. I mean, she was really one of our, and is one of our brightest lights in the United States Congress. And this is a moment, I think, that we're gonna take a time out and reflect. I think it's very fitting and appropriate that Speaker Boehner has decided to suspend activities in the House of Representatives in the coming week so that we can all take a little time to figure out how we move forward as a Congress and I think in the country at large.
Congressman, you mentioned suspending the votes that were meant to happen this week, particularly the repeal of the health care vote. Given that that's happened and all other activity for the rest of this week, how do you think, when that comes up again, the debate is going to happen?
Well, Christiane, I think that we're obviously going to have a spirited debate. There are strong feelings on both sides, but I hope that in that process, people will reflect on the tone of the debate and be respectful of differences in opinion going forward. And that's going to be the key. Again, in this country, we have strongly held views on different policy issues and how we should approach particular challenges that our country faces. And it's fitting that we have that vigorous debate. And the question is, how can you have that debate without somehow crossing a line in a way that can lead to supercharged rhetoric that could have unintended consequences?
One of the other big questions, Congressman Crowley, is going to be the one I posed to Congressman Flake just a couple of minutes ago, the whole question of security. One of the things that makes the House different is that you all are out there every day, one-on-one, face-to-face with your constituents. Are you going to have to dial that back now, and what will you lose if that's the case?
Well, first, let me say, I thought that Speaker Boehner's comments this morning were appropriately short. He said that an attack upon one is an attack upon all of us. I think attack upon the institution and on Congress and the country. One thing I don't want to move towards, though, is, as was mentioned before, Gabby Giffords, she herself said, had not only the title of representative, but it's actually a job description. It's what we do. We interact. We meet with our constituents on a daily basis, and that cannot be lost. We have to, I think, take another look at this. And I think the speaker is proper in that. I think we have to evaluate everything that's gone on, the motives behind this, the shootings, not only of Gabby, but of the judge and the six people that were killed, and really get behind that and make assessments after we know everything about what took place.
And we're joined now by our roundtable, George Will, Dick Armey, who's one of the founders of the Tea Party movement, and also Donna Brazile, Democratic political strategist. And joining me again, of course, is George Stephanopoulos. So, you've heard all of what has been discussed by the congresspeople. We've seen the tragedy of what is of what's unfolding here. Congresswoman Giffords is still in the ICU behind me at the medical center. George, when you hear the debate that's going on, how long do you think this is going to affect business in Washington?
Well, it'll affect business in Washington in several senses immediately, and that is, I think people will look across the aisle and feel that they're in a common profession with a common purpose for a common country, and that will perhaps turn down the rheostat of the temperature here. Over time, this tragedy will not deflect the great issues that confront the country. What is going on right now goes on whenever these things happen, and that is a search for the social environment to find some prompting that might have caused this, to therefore make it more soothing and understandable. The fact is there are 308 million people in this country, and a few of them are unhinged, and that may be the final explanation of this.
Final explanation, George, what do you think? Because it is very polarized now, this very debate.
No question about it. I think George is exactly right about that. That could be the final answer, depending on the facts for this gentleman. But I want to bring this to Dick Armey, but there's already, we are seeing a real political impact. You've got on the left, Keith Olbermann last night on MSNBC apologizing for any statements he might have made in the past that incited violence in any way. You see people really ready to fix blame from the very beginning of this tragedy. Do you expect that it's going to change the way that politicians act with each other and the way, frankly, a lot of us in the media act?
Well, it's hard to tell. We've watched these incidents for years. I mean, threats against members of Congress, assaults on the very body, the building itself. And while there's always a sort of a short-term set of new resolves, sort of like New Year's resolutions, they seem to fade back in the heatness of the debate. But your panel of members of Congress that just preceded us, one of the members made the point, this is our job, we're going to do our job. You have to understand, Across the nation now, we have millions of activists, citizens, who believe they're doing their job, too, to continually raise the issues that are of concern to them and their families that are before legislative bodies at state and local level. The fact of the matter is we still have extremely important, critical issues of public policy that must be sorted out. Now, hopefully this will be done in a more civil way. But this incident is no basis by which anybody who sees their duty to America to stand down from that duty, but to redouble it, perhaps with a greater degree of caution, and hopefully with a greater degree of civility. We've always wanted that. But still, nevertheless, we must do our duty and defend our liberties in this great country.
And Donna, when you hear former Congressman Army talking about the activism and the big issues that are still there to be debated and resolved, do you think that this kind of event, this kind of tragedy that's happened, is a harbinger of what's to come?
I hope not. Look, I believe that we can return to civility. We can have debates, honest and strong disagreements on many of the major issues facing our country, but we can do it with civility. What Congresswoman Giffords was doing was she was finding ways to talk to her constituents. Congress on Your Corner is one of the events that we urge members of Congress to hold with their constituents to give them FaceTime with their representatives so that they could talk about their issues and to even, you know, have disagreements. I think it's important that politicians watch what they say, that we watch the kind of tone that we're setting in this country, and that we encourage ordinary citizens to do the same.
Donna, that is inarguable. I think everybody wants that. But I guess I want to bring this back to George Will for just a second. We see so many of the incentives in our political debate now driving to the margins, driving to the most incendiary rhetoric. And it's hard to know whether this is going to be a circuit breaker for that of any kind.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, George. You're absolutely right. The new technologies, the instant and universal and absolutely cost-free communication that the Internet allows and tweeting and all the rest, the fact that cable television is ravenous for people to fill the time, and people fill the time often by going to the extremes, makes better television, makes crisper television. One side, the definite article, the other side. So there's a structure driven by technology that gives our debates a kind of artificial ferocity and clarity. But again, in a case like this, at the end of the day, we'll want to know, was there a political motivation here? You mentioned, George, earlier, the Virginia Tech and the Columbine massacres, which seem to have arisen simply from madness. Then you have John Wilkes Booth, a clear political motive and agenda, more or less easy to ascribe political motives to Lee Harvey Oswald and Sirhan Sirhan. We don't know where on the continuum this falls, but frankly, the better it will be for the country, the closer it falls to Columbine and Virginia Tech.
But using metaphors of violence has no place in our democracy and our political discourse. That's one of the things that needs to be dialed back. We should not allow people to use violent rhetoric, saying that there's a Second Amendment solution, that somehow or another we're going to target someone for victory, and not understand that these words might have consequences. And I think that's what the sheriff yesterday in Pima County was referring to when he talked about the vitriol on TV and radio.
Well, still, let me make the point. In the final analysis, when we get the final answer, why did this fella do this? The answer will come from psychology, not from sociology or political science. And we need to understand, if we really want to understand deviance and danger in this country, we should apply the correct field of study, the correct disciplines and tools of understanding with rigor and responsibility, not just exercising pop sociology out of our hip pocket.
Back again with our roundtable and really in our closing moments. You've heard a lot about the debate. We've got legislation coming up. I want to ask each of you how you think this is going to affect the legislation and the debates over that, and will there be, do you believe, any change in the security for the Congress people?
I certainly hope, Christian, there won't be a change in the security. The Capitol already looks some days embarrassing, like the capital of a third world country, worried about a restive tank regiment at the edge of town. when I came to this town to work in the Congress 40 years ago, you could walk in any door in the Capitol and stride freely about the people's place. So I would hope not. I don't think this will change, Christian, the way people vote on particular issues. It may change, for the better, the way they talk about all issues.
I think there should be a reassessment of the security, especially for district office staff and when members go home. Perhaps some members will now travel with additional aides, will alert the local officials if they receive any threats. That's appropriate given the circumstances.
Well, let me remind, we discovered in my office years ago that local police officials are very useful, very willing to be helpful when you have a large gathering, a tall meeting that is publicized. They're more often willing and in fact prefer that you ask them to provide some security on the spot simply because it's the sort of thing that would attract fruitcakes and unbalanced people. So my own view is I would encourage the members of Congress, when you're setting up a town hall meeting sort of session that will be publicized, the locations will be announced, prevail upon your local authorities. I bet you will find that you will get security apparatus that will make everybody in the meeting much more safe.
And now on this day, we dedicate a special in memoriam.
It is a tragedy for Arizona and a tragedy for our entire country.
We remember all of those who died in war this week, and the Pentagon released the names of 9 soldiers and Marines killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Please stay tuned to ABC News as this story continues to develop. I'm Christiane Amanpour. Thank you for joining part of your Sunday with us, and we'll see you again next week.